Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys at a kitchen table talking about Bitcoin and the broader Bitcoin space. Though we may own some of the equities and tokens discussed on the show, it doesn't mean that you should own them too. It's important to do your own research and due diligence, and also understand that any money invested could be lost. Nothing we say is financial advice, and honestly, you shouldn't ever take financial advice from two guys at a kitchen table, regardless of whether or not there's microphones in front of them. Friends and enemies, welcome to episode 6 of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. My name is Joey. I'm here with my co-host, Len. Len, how are you doing this evening, buddy?
Wonderful. How are you, Joey?
I'm very well, thank you, sir. The price of Bitcoin in US dollars, $56,958.41.
And in Canadian, we have $70,093.46.
An absolute beating today and yesterday because of the Ethereum heads. Like, what's wrong with these people? Do these guys not get it yet? They still don't get it. They're still buying Ethereum at $3,000. Come on.
Yeah. Even I kind of jumped on board but got out, and I'm leaving my profits to ride. So I don't know what's going to be happening going forward with Ethereum, but it's been on a wild ride. That and Doge. Doge, for whatever reason, actually, I do know the reason why. But wow, it's been a wild ride for each of those two.
Oh, whatever. What's in the news this week? We got some good stories this week. I can't wait to get into this.
Yeah, so we're going to jump right into Trevor Lawrence, the number one overall pick in the NFL. So he was the Jags' number one overall pick, and he's asking that his signing bonus be paid in Bitcoin and other crypto. And he'll be partnering with Blockfolio. The terms have yet to be released, but it's projected his contract will be about $36.8 million, including a $25 million signing bonus. This is kind of in line with Joe Burrow's signing bonus from 2020, when he was a number one overall pick, and he was given a signing bonus of about $23.9 million. So for Mr. Lawrence, the numbers are still, they still have yet to be revealed, but it's this pretty much opens the door for other high-profile players to jump on board and take their salary in Bitcoin. This also further legitimizes the currency or Bitcoin as a form of payment. So this is great news for the world of Bitcoin, and I'd love to hear your take on this.
Were there any first-round picks who took their salary in Ethereum?
To best of my knowledge, no.
Still no. That's so weird. Anyway, a story for another time. We talked a little bit a couple of weeks ago about the salary caps and the implications that some of these sports leagues would have, the implications of paying athletes in Bitcoin would have for some of these leagues, specifically the hard cap league. So the NFL is a hard cap league. Lawrence's next deal, assuming that things continue to trend the way they're trending now, and he pans out to be some kind of, some kind of talent that can carry a franchise, especially at the quarterback position. His next contract is going to be worth more than $400 million if he stays with the Jags. So if you're talking about $400 million over 5 or 7 or 10, you know, who knows what the length and total will be. I'm just ballparking, kind of spitballing on the back of Patrick Mahomes' recent contract. You know, if you could pay some of that in Bitcoin with the assumption, you know, at like a 70% chance or a 60% chance that there's going to be a significant increase in value of part of that contract because it's paid in crypto, you're laughing if you're a team. Because the teams don't have to worry about the salary cap. I think that this is, like you mentioned, only the beginning of this kind of thing, because there's a lot of kids now coming up who know Bitcoin, know digital currencies, know digital assets, are comfortable with them, and they want to cash in, man. Not to mention the NFL has like a terrible, terrible problem with people managing their money after their careers are done. So this is a great opportunity for them to invest without really investing and, HODL, as they say. Think about your time preferences as an athlete and consider what's going to happen to you after your career. I'm pretty sure the shelf life for quarterbacks like relatively long, especially a first-round quarterback. But if you're like a skill position player, running back, receiver, running back especially, like, oh my God, it's like a 3-year shelf life, I'm pretty sure. So anything that helps the NFL paint themselves in a light that lends itself to, oh, we're, you know, helping our players build their future during uncertain times, I think that you may see them run with something like this. It's possible that that they really embrace it. So good for them.
The one thing about quarterbacks is if you're not panning out, it's hard to repackage you into a different position like you can with, say, tight end, running back, receiver. You know, you could be put on special teams, or even, you know, different position, a different skilled position. Once you're quarterback, it's really hard to do. So we've seen only very few players transition to something else. Another thing, Patrick Mahomes, did he take a percentage of the ownership of the Chiefs for his last contract? Or I remember hearing about that, but I didn't look too much into it.
No, I don't think so.
Sorry, then totally scratch that. I'm not a sports guy anymore, so you know, my information might be a little bit out of whack. So
you know who got tryout with the Jags recently as a tight end?
I wouldn't have a clue.
Tim Tebow.
Ah, he just quit baseball recently.
Is it quitting if you can't really play that well and you just don't have a roster spot?
He was, shoot, it was a double A baseball is the highest he got, which is pretty darn high. Yeah, so what, he just probably just saw the writing on a wall and said he can't go any further.
He can't pay the bills, yeah.
Yeah, well, whatever. You know what, to get there, it's actually pretty darn good. But yeah, he's limited in skill in baseball and looks like even in football. Anyways, on to the next topic. Let's go on to the U.S. debt. So got some numbers in the past 20 years. The U.S. national debt went from $5.6 trillion to $28.2 trillion. That's a little bit over a 5x. The M2 U.S. money supply went from $4.7 trillion to $20.3 trillion. That's a 4x, a little bit over that. And the U.S. debt U.S. debt to GDP ratio went from 58.15% to 127.72%. That's a 2x. So this is going to be the driving factor for how things are going to be done moving forward in the world economy. Cheap credit, it's spurring a lot of people to borrow money, and there seems to be no end in sight with this cheap credit. In fact, we had the chairman of the Fed mentioned several times that he does not anticipate a rate hike for quite some time. In fact, there was a stat from earlier this year that about 20% of all U.S. dollar currency printed throughout history has been done in the last 12 months. And this percentage has since increased through the last round of stimulus. So anybody thinking that's inflation's in check, they really got to give their heads a shake, do some digging, and realize that things are getting out of whack with the Fed. And even here in Canada, they can't basically rein in spending. So it's going to drive up inflation numbers. It's going to really hurt the common person going forward. Thoughts, Joey?
Yeah, I just want to welcome everyone to the Canadian Interest Rates Podcast for the fifth week of six. No, but in all seriousness, this is important stuff. We talked a bit on this show about how low rates present interesting investing opportunities and strategies if you have the capital to take money out against. I have friends, and I'm sure you do as well, and I put my money where my mouth is in this regard, who are looking at mortgages and want to lock in the low rate because the bank, when they call them, and this is what we experienced too. I'm not sure when the last time you renewed your mortgage was, but when we called the bank back in September, they were on us steady, like white on rice about, you're going to renew, you got to lock in these rates. This is a rate you're going to want to lock in. We wanted to sell our house, our realtor. Oh, you trust me, when you get your new mortgage, you want to lock it in. These rates are not, these people are either lying or stupid. And these numbers are out there for public consumption. You should be able to understand that much like we've talked about before, raising rates in this environment where most of the GDP is debt based and the GDP includes, in Canada anyways, includes government payouts. So STIRB or STIMI in the States. Like if you consider that the GDP number includes those payments, the debt to income ratio it's way more crazy than it seems at face. And at face, it's like Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest crazy. But you make it to Hannibal Lecter crazy when you take into account where the money comes from and how it's measured. So, man, there's opportunities. Like I don't want to plug lead in. I don't use the service, at least not yet. But if you have like capital, Bitcoin capital or cash capital to deploy, man, there's not ever been a better time to take risks based on the interest rate environment, based on the political environment, based on all these different things. And that M2 stat you have there about the 20% of all US currency printed in the last 12 months, it's insane. Everyone has seen on Reddit, or sorry, on Twitter, Bitcoin Twitter, the St. Louis Fed was doing an M2 money supply chart for a long time, monthly or quarterly. And in, I think, June of last year or May of last year, they stopped updating it. Suddenly, it was no longer something they were updating. They discontinued the chart. the thing was a fucking straight line up after being, you know, probably like a 60 degree hill for its the entirety of its existence, at least as far as the chart went back. I would discontinue it too, because eventually people are going to start looking at Powell. And once they figure out what the definition of transitory is, which is something he says in every FOMC press conference now, it's all transitory. Inflation is transitory. Equity prices are transitory. Commodity prices are transitory. It's not transitory if the line is going straight up, and there's no end in sight for this stuff. So if you have capital to deploy, and specifically if you have collateral against which you can get that new capital loans for cheap, I think you got a really interesting opportunity here. I don't recommend this to everybody. Like, I'm pretty young. If I want to take a shot like that, I can recover. But I don't think there's ever been a better environment for risk taking than there is right now.
That's what's causing a lot of people to jump into Doge and ETH. The risk tolerance. They're like, whatever. I have lots of time to recover, and you know, things are going crazy everywhere else. So why not dump it in this? But anyway, so next on the agenda here, we have the Taproot rollout. So that's it's the hot item on the Bitcoin community. It's being talked about all over the place. And for anybody that's kind of like looking to see what's the stage at the rollout, where they are, if you go on taproot.watch, that's a website. I never knew that .watch was actually a domain. But anyways, you could go on that and you can actually see that where we are at with the rollout with Taproot. So for those not aware what Taproot is, it will allow for improved privacy. The last major update took place in 2017. So that was when there was a big debate between the big blocks and the small blocks. The small blocks won, and there was a fork with the big blocks making Bitcoin Cash, but that's a topic for another day. So this is another attempt for an upgrade to the BTC software. So they're looking for a consensus to implement Taproot. There's a 3-month window to adopt it once the code is shipped, and it has. At least, you know, they're waiting to see if everyone's okay with it and they're going to adopt it. So the potential for full adoption will take place November 2021, should everything go as planned. So there is lots of support within the community. Some of the things that will be included is the Schnorr signature that's going to be used for aggregate signatures for multisigs. That's going to make things much more compact for more transactions, much more than, I believe, the 7 that's being... that's the limit right now in BTC. Schnorr has been implemented in Bitcoin Cash some time ago, but again, we're not going to talk about that. So originally there was the old style transaction. That was version 1 of the Bitcoin. And then there was SegWit, which is what we have now, which is version 2. And we're trying to transition to the version 3, which, you know, looks like it's going to be Taproot. So included in Taproot, there's going to be smart contracting functionality, potential improvements for end user efficiency. They're going to make smart contracts more efficient, privacy improvements. It's scalable. There's lots of positivities surrounding this. It looks like it's a huge improvement on Bitcoin. Hopefully it's going to be adopted. So right now, miners who wish to adopt the upgrade can signal their support by including special data in the blocks they mine called signal bits. So if 90% of the blocks mined during this difficulty period includes a Taproot signal bit of you know, that they're saying they're going to go ahead with it, within the 2-week period, that basically says they're locked in. And right now we have the period of time which they have to make that decision is up until August 11th. That's the timeout. And then after that, we're looking at November 2021 as the adoption of Taproot. It's really an exciting time, and look forward to seeing this being adopted by Bitcoin community. But it's, again, this is decentralized. It's almost a democracy. Everyone has their vote. This is great. What's your thoughts on this, Joey?
So I'm looking at the taproot.watch website, which is good. Have you been there?
Yes, I have.
It's pretty cool, eh? The sort of Tetris, like greens and reds. I like the way it looks. It's like a cool setup. So I'm looking at it right now, and it says that in the current signaling period of 2016 blocks, we can't activate because we've already crossed the threshold where we would have needed more than whatever it is, you know, or less than 308 non-signaling blocks out of the number that we, I guess, have so far. I'm definitely not saying that properly, but whatever, you get the idea. Basically, we've already crossed the threshold that we needed to not cross in order to activate in this signaling period. That's okay. We're not worried about that. Taproot as a technology is, like you said, it's a couple of things bundled into one. So I did a little digging on this. And for those who are hearing this Taproot thing for the first time, we did an episode with Mario Gibney of Ledin, and we sprung this on him. And he very graciously indulged us for most of the interview on his thoughts on Taproot and the activation mechanism and some of the pros and cons around the tech. It's a good listen. And there's other good stuff out there too. I think Fun with Bitcoin did an episode on this as well recently, though I can't remember the exact title. And of course, Citadel Dispatch from Odell and Friends over on the TFTC feed covered this too. This is an interesting piece of tech. You know, for all the knocks on ETH and other coins that we shill out on this podcast, or dish out, I should say, on this podcast.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we're trying to add some basic functionality there that we're calling scripts. And basically, it's just different spend mechanisms. So additional signatures or signatures plus time elapsed, and there's other different mechanisms you can use there too. That would be cool for Bitcoin to have that, and I think would eliminate some of the you know, advantage is the wrong word, but certainly some of the niche market that ETH has captured. I don't think smart contracts are that big a network to begin with. I could be wrong about that, but as far as I understand it, they're really not capturing that much value even on the Ethereum network. So I like that, but it's not that important. Because of the nature of the new transactions, Taproot transactions could stick out on the blockchain to analytics companies. Now, I don't know enough about this one way or another, but the way it was explained to me is that these signatures and transactions, though they are secure, or more secure, I should say, or more private, they're going to look different on chain. And so if this is only adopted by some, even once the miners adopt, obviously, if only some people start using these sorts of transactions, they're going to look weird and obviously of issue to analytics companies. So the core devs seem to not think that's a problem. I did a little bit of digging today through some of the responses from core devs, and they seem to think it'd be fine. Like I said, I don't know one way or the other. Presumably, if Taproot takes off, then all those transactions would look the same anyways. And the ones that'll stick out are the non-Taproot transactions. I think I'm capturing that well. This is, I think, part of the level two efficiency thing too, right? I don't know if you mentioned that or not, but it seems to me like Bitcoin now, like you said on this show, Len, and you said in some other appearances we've done, it's time for Bitcoin to take the next step and move to speedier transactions while keeping security at the forefront of the ethos of the coin. And this is, I think, another way that we're going to do that. I say we're, though I've never written or reviewed a line of code in my life, but I count myself among the Bitcoin faithful. So I think this is a good thing, man. Taproot and other network upgrades, because of the history, like there's some PTSD, obviously, but I think that the ecosystem has matured. The economy around the Bitcoin code has matured in such a way that there's not going to be the same sort of big block, small block, you know, infighting there was years ago. Bitcoin now has seen so many forks that all failed miserably. And I would include stuff like Litecoin in there, but certainly all the Bitcoin namesake forks. I don't think anyone wants to do that anymore. Unlike what you see in Ethereum, these other shitcoins, where founders are constantly forking off and trying to overtake, I should say, Ethereum or whatever other coin they came from with their new projects. I don't think you're going to see that in Bitcoin anymore. I don't think Taproot's any different.
So one thing about Taproot, what it's going to be overcoming is at the current stage where we have with Bitcoin right now, you can actually tell what is a transaction, say in the Lightning Network, and what's not. So if you do enough analysis, because it's all openly available, so through some open source analysis, you could see kind of where the money is going to and where it's coming from. So Taproot is going to eliminate that. So it will add another layer of privacy on top of what we have right now, which, you know, who the heck's going to say that's a bad thing? So mm-hmm. On to the next one. Kind of a controversial subject. I don't know if it's how much we could talk about it, but the Iran crypto mining. So Iran's central bank is reportedly allowing the country's financial institutions to use cryptocurrency for mining to pay for imports. Their local crypto mining industry could generate as much as $2 million a day in revenue. The Central Bank of Iran had previously stipulated only digital assets for imports funding could be used by itself and nobody else. So essentially, Iran's central bank had a monopoly, but now they're expanding it to allow other of their country's financial institutions to use cryptocurrency mining. Wow, that was a mouthful to say. So those people that are like talking about, let's, you know, the greenhouse gas, you know, all this, I did some digging in on how much or what kind of like power generation Iran has. Apparently 83% of it was from natural gas and only 9% is from oil. I thought for sure it was the other way around, but I was way wrong after I did some research. So Iran turned out to be the second producer of natural gas worldwide, just behind Russia, and oil for the reserves are number four behind Venezuela, Saudi, and Canada. But I digress. So the fact that they're doing this, they're going to be allowing their financial institutions to mine for cryptocurrency to pay for exports. It's kind of a way of circumventing any of the, you know, what's been imposed on them by Western nations, i.e. United States. So my speculation is that this is going to actually tip the United States' hand for regulation on cryptocurrency / Bitcoin, because one of their sworn enemies is being allowed now to use Bitcoin to actually mine and pay for whatever. Like, this might be a terrible thing for Bitcoin, and I'm curious to see how the US reacts to this. Joey?
Okay. Well, first of all, you're right. I had written in my response here that Iran is mining Bitcoin, presumably spending it this way as well, because they want to get around the SWIFT network, which is, I think, if not completely orchestrated by the United States, certainly influenced heavily by their politics and their politicians and their foreign policy decisions. So, look, this is, I think, a broad subject, and I'm glad you had this on the A block. I wasn't expecting to see this when you sent this to me on the weekend. But the more I think about this, the more I think that this is going to become, again, like mining and spends and operations overseas, like physical Bitcoin operations overseas, are going to become a fulcrum on which the United States makes a policy decision. You're right about that. I think the US has to start considering mining on their soil as a foreign policy initiative. I know that's like, it's kind of hard to paint the details in there, but if you don't start doing this, if you're America, surely your enemies are going to. And you're seeing that already with China. Now you can say, well, the miners aren't actually owned by China, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I wouldn't bet one way or another there, but certainly at the very least, the miners' proceeds and the miners' operations exist only at the pleasure of the Chinese government. So that's something you're going to start to see, man. And I honestly believe that the other thing to look at here, because you mentioned the nat gas and oil and all that, like, the States has a problem with energy policy. And the problem is that there's this obsession now with greens and renewables, while their biggest and most dangerous competitors are using fossils. And this is not a fight they can win long term. I listened to a good podcast the other day, though the name of the woman who was on it escapes me. She wrote a book about the energy economy in the US and abroad. And, you know, really, when you're doing green energy, when you're doing green energy as a policy position, what you are really doing from a pragmatic point of view is you're only changing where the hydrocarbons are being generated. You're not eliminating the hydrocarbons. And it seems to me that the US's biggest enemies, cold or hot, all understand this and don't care about renewables and whatnot. And it's funny, there was a slip from Biden. I understand it was off the script during the State of the Union about, even if America does everything right as far as their green policy, it won't make a dent if other countries don't do the same. And so I think about that. I think about what you're seeing in Bitcoin and mining, and I think of what you're seeing in energy and how the petrodollar is, you know, the world settlement mechanism and all these different things working together. And I just think the US is either pretending they don't get it or they truly don't get it. And either way, they have to turn it around ASAP, because this is a security issue at some point. If Bitcoin continues to ride higher, what is the threshold at which these guys will say, hey, wait a minute, we have to either ban it, which would be a disaster for their economy now, since I think, what did we say, $1 trillion, right? US dollars is the cap. That's just Bitcoin, probably two and change for the greater crypto economy. I'm using that. That's a dirty word I've used too many times today, crypto. But anyway, we'll keep going. These things are so woven into the economic system now that unless you start to figure out ways to move in this ecosystem that are to your advantage, you're going to lose, and you're going to be either too small to ban it or you're not going to be able to ban it, because it's just going to take off and get away from you. So I don't know. What do you think about all that? Does that sound about right? I just think that, like, I can't imagine these guys don't see it coming, but I don't see like an adequate reaction in any of the policy decisions they're making in the States.
Well, on a federal level, it doesn't seem that they're acting fast enough or even, you know, acting at all. But on more of a local level, you see that on state level and even on municipal level, there's some you know, areas that are very pro crypto for mining. So, you know, we could look at Miami for an example. You know, they're trying to attract a whole bunch of miners. They have to move. If they don't, like you say, they are going to be left in the dust, and it's going to be awful. So they will become almost a third world in the crypto world. So they got to move on it. They got to do something. They probably have a lot of excess energy that they could use for mining Bitcoin. I'm speculating, but there's got to be some excess energy that's just not being used. And why not divert that to a miner? You know, maybe a publicly owned miner that, you know, just you know, creates Bitcoin. Who knows? I mean,
it's so hard because like the way they've painted themselves into a corner with energy policy in the last 5 years, even Trump was doing it, right? The other powers of the world, and I'm not talking about like France and Germany, like the quote unquote, like, you know, the docile giants. I'm talking about like the enemies you have that could go from Cold War to Hot War on a dime without worrying about votes, without worrying about anything. They'll just go. Like these guys are acting on what's necessary, not the, you know, whims of the uneducated public. I hate to say it, but like truthfully, this is really the policy fulcrum that a lot of first world governments operate on, unfortunately. And, you know, we've never seen this dynamic, right? In the past, again, I feel like I'm getting too political here, but in the past, dictatorships were generally less well off economically, didn't have technological advances, didn't have all these things. But like China is not those things. They are on par with you or more advanced than you in every respect that matters in a cold or a hot war. And so you have to start considering moving on things without worrying about how many Twitter hashtags are going to pop up when you do something that the general public doesn't like. I almost hate to say it because that's, you know, countervailing to the principles of democratic rule, but you're getting into dangerous waters here. I think, I don't know how dangerous, but certainly they're more dangerous and more, the consequences are higher, I should say, than they were 5 years ago. So let's see. I don't know.
And so on to the next one. It's going to be miners hodling and the exchange balance on BTC exchange balances. So right now, I have a stat that says that 45% of Bitcoin supply has not moved in 2 years. So Glassnode is reporting that a massive withdrawal took place last week. It was about 11,500 Bitcoin. And that was in one day, in one shot. And that was like the largest transaction seen in 3 weeks. So all these small and even large transactions is causing a massive decrease in the Bitcoin supply on the exchanges. And just the miners are hodling this. So right now, Bitcoin miners, they collectively hold about 4.57 million BTC. That's about 15% of the total supply, according to Coinmetrics. Since March 2020, the Bitcoin supply has been falling on exchanges, except for two exchanges. One is Binance and one is Gemini. Those are the only two exchanges that they're having an increase in Bitcoin. I'm not sure why. So exchanges are down another 18K Bitcoin in the 24-hour period of time last week. So 18K was just taken off all exchanges altogether. And that's probably due to one big purchase from Nexon. We'll be talking about that later. But in 18,000...
You think? Oh, my God.
Well, it all adds up together. So Nexon purchased 17K. It's got to be, you know, anyways. So the number of transfers from exchanges reached an all-time high for this cycle. So this news that we have exchanges just bleeding BTC, they're not able to hold it, and miners keeping it on their balance book, it just, I think this is a double-edged sword. So on the plus side, you know, the miners, they got their pulse on the industry. They know what's going on. They have skin in the game. And for them to hold on to it, that's good. You know, that shows that there's a scarcity in Bitcoin and there's value in it. But holding it creates even more scarcity in it because there's less that could go around. But on the other side, and I've talked about this before, if they are going to start releasing this, so, you know, it's a lot of Bitcoin, 4.57 million Bitcoin that they're holding. If they start releasing it, it's going to create a glut in the market. And the price of Bitcoin has to drop. It can't remain where it is right now. There's going to be just an oversupply of Bitcoin. And I'm wondering what's going to happen going forward, because four of the five top mining pools by hash rate, they're Chinese. The fifth is in basically the United States. And there seems to be a concerted effort for China to crack down on Bitcoin mining. So I'm wondering if they're going to go after these mining operations. What's going to happen going forward? Are they going to start releasing the Bitcoin into the market? Like, I don't know. That this is a true gray area. I have no answers, and I'm curious to see how this is going to play out.
Well, what about this as far as the miners holding? Is it possible that the reason they're holding at a greater clip than they were during the last epoch, last halving epoch, is it possible that it's because now there's more opportunity for using Bitcoin as collateral for fiat loans? I was going to say that to Mario the other night, and I think that might be part of the equation. What do you think about that?
Yeah, why not? I mean, the price keeps going up, and it makes sense. Some have been, I'm wondering if they're going to be using what they have to pay for the day-to-day expenses, but they're not releasing it. But perhaps the higher price makes it so they don't have to release so much to cover their day-to-day expenses. There's lots of analysis to be done here. I don't know how to make heads or tails, but the fact that they have so much, and eventually it's going to come out. Nobody's going to hold on to it forever. And when it does, going to be a little scary in the market.
This is something I feel pretty good about, is that the floor for this, I think that 20-week moving average is a pretty strong support. We're kind of in like an ascending triangle right now on the Bitcoin price with a ceiling around, I don't know, I fat thumbed it earlier on my phone. It's like 58 or 59,000, maybe a bit higher, but not much. So, you know, I think the price will probably move up. I'm not super worried about this for now. We did find out last week, and, you know, we probably both knew this already, but when you have one of these Bitcoin collateral lending services, what happens is if the price goes down, you have to add capital or you're liquidated. Your position gets liquidated. That means that the vendor will sell your Bitcoin. And I don't know how much, you know, I wish I knew how much BlockFi had and how much Ledin had and how much, you know, Kraken, whoever else. I think Coinbase does staking at some level too. I'm not sure if that's just Ethan related garbage or if it's Bitcoin as well, some vehicle. But regardless, those numbers are probably getting big enough by dollar value as the price goes up that those loans and the capital and value stuck in there probably matters quite a bit. So I don't know. That being said, like, I have no desire to sell even a dime of this stuff at the moment. The on-chain indicators, like you mentioned, look good. Coins are coming off the exchange. Kraken's a pretty heavy retail-facing exchange, so I'm not too worried about people buying coin and bringing coin onto there. It doesn't really bother me too much. I'd like to see the HODL waves about that maybe at the end of this quarter and reassess that position, but I'm buying more than I ever have before. Now, the other thing I have written down here is the Chinese government may not crack down on miners except for maybe the profits, but as we've talked about here, today and other episodes, the thing that I worry about is that this is another avenue for a petrodollar attack. They use digital yuan already. They're settling their global infrastructure contracts in their digital yuan. Now they're going to have Bitcoin as perhaps another attack vector on the petrodollar. And again, maybe the States has its head in the sand, maybe it doesn't, but it sure looks like that, you know, head is pretty deep in the beach at this moment anyway.
It's making the US dollar much less relevant every day. And yeah, they got to do something to stem the tide here.
I think so. Yeah. And like, what's going to happen then if there is an issue, truly an issue in the US economy where there's a loss of consumer faith or consumer confidence in the dollar or in the stock market, you don't want to have all your chips on the table already when that happens. But it seems to me like, you know, the world over, there's more and more gaps in US like fiscal policy due to their decisions overseas or I should say monetary policy. But anyway, regardless, the US economy is as fragile, I think, as it's ever been for two reasons. One, the policy, but the other one is the consumer confidence in the stock market is, you know, it's not where it should be for everything being at all time highs. I'll say that much. I think that's probably pretty widely agreed upon. So let's see. I don't know, man. I'm hopeful that they figure it out because they need to for us in Canada and for Europe as well. You know, someone's got to put their foot in the water first, and usually it's them. So let's hope they get it together soon.
Yeah, whatever they do, it's definitely going to impact us. We're going to feel the effects of it. Now, they don't have too many more silver bullets left in their chamber. Interest rates are mighty low as it is. You know, printing money, you know, that's kind of almost a last resort type thing. But
crazy.
Yeah, what bags of tricks do they have now to keep themselves going?
I don't know.
All right, so we're on to the B block stories. So we're going to start off with a bunch of Canadian stories. And three of them initially are going to be from Hut. So bear with me on these Hut related stories. I'm not trying to shill Hut, but they just had some they had some news items on this week. So HUT8, which is ticker HUT on a TSVX, is growing its 109 megawatt power facility by additional 100 megawatts focused on waste gas, aka flare gas, conversion to BTC. So furthermore, Hut was also recognized by CIO Bulletin. CIO Bulletin is a global business branding and technology media company, and they recognized him as one of the top 30 companies to watch in 2021. This is due to Hut 8's revenue diversification, environmental, social, and corporate governance, and carbon footprint reduction strategy. And finally, with Hut 8, they're partnering with Galaxy Digital. And what they're going to be doing is they're going to be handing over an additional 1,000 BTC that they have and get 4% yield from that. So this is a way for them to increase, you know, their revenue with what they have in the book. So I'm not sure if you have anything to add to Hut 8, but that's what I have on the books for this week.
I like Hut 8, man, as a company. I was a stockholder for some time. I am no longer, so I feel like I can talk about them pretty freely. That, you know, in a space where bull runs bring in fly-by-night companies trying to make a quick buck, much like in 2017 when Kodak became a blockchain company all of a sudden after they spent two decades or three decades printing out Polaroids, they opted to become a chain tech company. Bull markets bring out companies that will tell you they're doing something great, whether it's in mining or infrastructure or chain analytics or token sales or whatever. And oftentimes it's, you know, to be kind, it's a bit of a joke. And to be perfectly honest, it's intentionally misleading to the detriment of investors. Oftentimes those investors are first time in the space or something of the same nature. But Hut's been around, man. Hut has been around since, I think, 2015 or 2016. They're popular both on traditional equities exchanges and traditional equities hubs. And they seem to be popular in Bitcoin too. ESG is obviously like a huge grift and scam, so I don't really put much stock in that. But I do appreciate that even they have managed to pull a fast one on the powers that be to get that kind of like whatever pat on the back designation for their efforts in reducing greenhouse emissions. I take it that's what it's for. I don't think they're getting it for governance, but maybe they are. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at their board, so you'll have to tell me what their board is, what the makeup of their board is, if I'm wrong about that. But good. I like Hut, man. Maybe I'll buy some more. Are you holding Hut right now or no?
Yes, I do. So full disclosure, I do have some Hut. And you're talking about Kodak, but didn't Kodak get into the pharmaceutical game? Wasn't it that?
Are they doing those too?
I could have swore that's what happened in mid to later half of 2020. But again, I could be wrong. I remember whatever announcement they made during that time, their stock jumped huge. So whatever. Kodak is rebranding. Let's see what happens with them going forward. Next story.
They launched a Kodak coin in 2018. So peak scam. Peak scam.
Yeah, yeah. Well, 2017 might have been peak. So they were late to the game. Next I have is the exchange Bitbytes, Canadian exchange. And they announced that e-transfers just got better. And I quote, "Instantly add funds with Interac e-transfer using a unique password answer and security question automatically generated under your account settings." So anyone that is using Bitbuy, they made it a little bit easier now to use e-transfers. Next, I have a little stat. So,
wait a minute. Canada's, are you done with
BitBuy? Yeah, I'm done with BitBuy. Do you want to add anything to that?
That's a ShakePay feature. ShakePay has had that for the entirety of their existence. What BitBuy? Hey, come on, BitBuy, please.
They're catching up.
Come on, Len. We can't be giving these guys any credit for something that's old, this old. You know, what are you going to give them credit for next? They got, you can skip tracks on the CDs that you play here with BitBuy. Skipping tracks.
So, God. No, well, if a Canadian exchange or company that's related to Bitcoin comes up with something, I'm going to report on it. I think it's just our duty to do so because this is the Canadian Bitcoiners. So regardless if it's, you know, it's a company that's catching up to somebody else, we should report it. Next I have is Canada's public Bitcoin funds now manages over 33,000 BTC. So there's a breakdown for this. So Canada's Bitcoin ETFs manage 24K and Canada's public miners manage over 3,500. And so there's a lot of Bitcoin that's being done by private sector. Would you wager to guess how many Bitcoin the Canadian government is managing?
The Canadian government, I would guess, is managing zero Bitcoin at the moment.
Yeah, you're right. So ding, ding, ding. Imagine that. So that's you're the winner. Unfortunately, collectively, we're the losers. Next I have on the list is ShakePay is going to be, or they already have, adjusted the rewards for shaking their phone. So I'm not sure if people that are not aware, if you're a ShakePay customer and you signed up with a referral link, shaking your phone nets you Satoshis. They just changed their payout structure for starting the month of May. If you want to see the breakdown, go take a look at the ShakePay website to see the charts. Joey, I know you were not too pleased.
I just want to say something. I have two things to say. One, I've been a ShakePay user for a few years, okay? And the service is great. We've talked on our channel. Len was good enough to put up a video, both of the summary and comp for all the Canadian exchanges, but also one specifically about ShakePay and how ShakePay works and how shaking sats works, which is the sort of gimmick Len just described. Instead of a marketing budget, I think in lieu of spending on shitty commercials, what they do is they hand out a couple of Satoshis to you if you shake your phone after referring somebody. It's a great way to onboard new people, and you get some free Bitcoin. Not cash, Bitcoin, which is what you're after. That said, people on the ShakePay subreddit, and I don't think the Bitcoin Canada subreddit really is as bad for this, but the ShakePay subreddit has like this unbelievably whiny user base when it comes to the shaking sats going down. Do you know how many people were disappointed that shaking sats dropped, as like the reward dropped from 1500 Satoshis at your like maximum, whatever your maximum like
streak, 200 days.
Yeah. 200 day streak. That's where you get your max sats. Like, okay, guys, it drops by 500 sats. Fine. And people are upset that because the price went down or stayed flat in Bitcoin, they said it should have stayed the same or gone up. Like, dude, do you know how many people they onboarded last month, the month before that month? Like,
we talked about, they had 420,000 customers that signed up for their services.
Like, come on, you can't give all that money away. As much as I like the free Satoshis, they're really doing a service for the community that no other place is doing. If you can show me a Bitcoin faucet that takes almost no effort from you as a user and almost no effort from you as a new user, which is even better, I'd love to see it. I think that's a really like good Samaritan, good Bitcoin citizen thing to do. Hate the spreads, but I love the shaking sats thing, and the UI is incredible. It's a good app. Like, this is not something to complain about. I know we're reporting on it. You're right. We have to report on stuff like this, Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, but don't get mad about this. Like, it's dope, man. Don't forget those 1,000 sats, if you got 200 days, are going to be yours next year, the year after that, the year after that. So today it's only a couple bucks, but I'll tell you right now, man, when it was 15,000 sats a day, when I was shaking last year and two years ago, those sats are still mine, and that ain't a dollar anymore. That's quite a bit more. So enjoy the sats you have and store them. And, you know, if you find a better faucet, I'd love to hear about it, but I would not be complaining about that. Not a peep about it from me.
No, they closed those faucets a long time ago. So yeah, it's no free lunch though. ShakePay, we talked, you mentioned it, their spread is rather high. Shameless plug, watch my video on YouTube about the various different exchanges, and I do a nice breakdown on the spreads for different exchanges. ShakePay, I'm looking right at you, lower your spread, come on. Lower your spread. So yeah, so on to the next one, Joey. So Canada's, we had another Canadian firm that filed for a Bitcoin ETF. So Toronto-based investment manager Nine Point Partners has filed its final prospectus for a Bitcoin exchange traded fund. Nine Point is aiming for the BTC Trust to be covered to a BTC ETF by May 6th. So we're talking in 3 days. The ticker for this is going to be BTC.U for the US dollars, and for the Canadians, BIT.C. So there's going to be the fifth from my count for ETFs under the Bitcoin banner.
Did you see that America pushed their ruling on Bitcoin ETFs out till like June or July?
Yes. When you file with the SEC, they have a maximum period of time, 240 days, I think it was the maximum time. So they can keep delaying it up until that, but then they have to make a decision by the end of that 240 day period of time. So that one, I think, is delayed to June, and now I don't think it could be delayed any further beyond that. So they have a gun to their head. They're gonna have to make a decision one way or another.
I like the number of coins in control of Canadian institutions and, you know, vis-a-vis Canadian investors in these ETFs, outstanding and growing every day. It's great.
33K.
Yeah, it's outstanding, man. I love it. So good for us. Okay, what's next?
So next, it's Wealthsimple. I know they're not really crypto, but they do sell it, and they have, you know, you could buy crypto stocks in there. But here we go. They have raised $750 million in a funding round. And with that, it values them at about $5 billion. These numbers are all in CAD. And so that $5 billion valuation more than triples them from when they were last evaluated back in October. They have more than 2 million users, and a lot of people have been jumping on board during the pandemic. They offer commission-free stock trading, as well as an automated investing, cryptocurrency trading, and tax services. I know you and I both use Wealthsimple, so we know what the product is all about. Good for them. It's growing by leaps and bounds.
For anyone who doesn't have Wealthsimple, we have a promo code that'll be somewhere on the YouTube channel. I won't put it on the Reddit post, but you can find it. They manage a high five-figure sum for me, and I have no doubts that every other dollar I invest, RSP or TFSA, until something better comes along, it's never going back to a bank. It's staying with Wealthsimple, zero commission, zero nonsense on spreads. Glenn, did you see the premium stuff they put in? This is not a plug for Wealthsimple. They don't sponsor the show, but we use it. Did you see the premium stuff they put in, that low cost?
Is that to allow you to put in, like, deposit a larger sum of money quicker?
So you get right now for no cost.
And you get
real
time quotes?
So yeah, real. So for no cost, you get 250 every 3 days or 4 days or something like that. And then for $3 a month, you get real time quotes and $1,000 instantly every 3 days, which is pretty good, man, for a free app. And I think it's only going to get better. So again, they don't sponsor the show, but if you want to sign up, check out Len's. Do you have a video on Wealthsimple, Len? I don't remember if you do or not.
Not as of yet. If you, well, one of us will do one. Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's worthwhile. We will put one out on YouTube.
Yeah, we'll do that. And man, like, don't buy your Bitcoin there, but if you're interested in Bitcoin related equities or traditional equities, like, it's a lot better in the bank, I'll tell you that much. So anyway, if you have questions, reach out. We'll help you out.
There is a give and take. Well, ShakePay, you don't have the variety you would with other areas. You know, I don't want to name anyone, but there are some. Sorry, you're right. Wealthsimple, you don't have the same variety as you would with other ones. So if you want to find a smaller stock, you may not be able to purchase it through Wealthsimple. Also, it's kind of a no frills. You want to do options, you don't have that. It's just basically purchasing stock and selling it. And if you want to buy US-based stock, Wealthsimple may not be the best place to do it, because you're paying a 1.5% premium when you buy, and then 1.5% premium when you sell. That's just for them to manage the exchange between Canadian and US funds. You could probably find better options elsewhere. Do your research. I don't want to name anyone, but there are maybe better options for those types of purchases.
This is how you know me and Len don't talk before the show, because I just go like waist deep into Wealthsimple simping, and then you just tell me it's not the best option. So there you go.
No, it is for some, but it's not a be all end all. You know, if you want to do option trading, you don't have that ability on Wealthsimple. So anyways, before we break up the Canadian Bitcoiners as a result of me being, we're going to the rest of the news. I'm basically done with the Canadian talk. So we had some breaking news last week. We had over $3 billion of new USDC that was minted. That was on one day. That was that basically shows that there's a lot of people trying to onboard into cryptocurrency, and they're speculating a lot of US investors. And that was an increase. During the span of 4 days, the total increased supply of USDC was increased 22%. It's almost like printing money. and I suspect that that large, you know, people coming in and buying USDC was people coming in and buying, I don't want to say it, but it looks like Ethereum, because Ethereum is going nuts. Yeah. What is, you know, where's that money going to? It doesn't look like it's going into BTC. BTC is pretty flat. Ethereum's just going nuts. That's just my analysis. I could be way off base. Maybe they're going to Doge as well, but you know, Ethereum seems to be getting a lot of new money coming into it. It's just rocketing up.
Ethereum is, I think, sort of a good indicator of retail interest, new retail interest. We talked a bit about unit bias here before, and we've mentioned this in a couple of other appearances we've made, but I'll mention it here. There's, I think, a belief with new investors, specifically new investors who are also new to crypto, that unit bias is something that I shouldn't say there's a belief that unit bias does something because you don't really know you have it, but there's this belief that the more units of an investment you can get, the better off you are. So naturally the inclination is instead of buying 0.0001 Bitcoin for $10, you're going to buy Ethereum instead and get to, you know, a percent or 25% of one ETH in a shorter time and you know, by the same mechanism, get to a full ETH before you can get to anything resembling full on a Bitcoin. Now, while that may be true, the problem is that, again, it shows sort of a lack of maturity from new investors. And I know we have some Ethereum fans, so I won't show my teeth here, but let's just say that it's not the place you should be parking your money. We talk a lot about how Bitcoin has certain properties that make it the most valuable token in the space, I think without any real competition, but that's only my opinion, DYOR. Ethereum has its fair share of issues, most of them sprouting from its foundation, its pre-mine, its monetary policy, and the uncertainty around that, and the levers that can be pulled one way or another in order to influence change. But I digress. As far as your thesis that a lot of that USDC is going into ETH, fuck man, price shows it. What's it up in the last couple of days? 20, 30, 40%, something like that. It's up a lot in the last week or so.
Yeah, since Thursday, Friday, it was 2,700 US and it got up to 3,300 today. So it's a massive jump in 4 days, 3 days.
Yeah.
So yeah, that may be where all the money is, or a lot of the new USDC money is going into. But again, we need some further analysis on that.
I would argue as an investment strategy, when you see stuff like Ether running and Bitcoin stalling out or rising very, very, very slowly, or even I think today or yesterday dropping a bit on the 24-hour candle, what you're seeing there is consolidation and accumulation on Bitcoin near the all-time high. And for me, that's a buying opportunity. Len, I don't know if you want to blink twice for yes or offer some commentary on that, but I see stuff like that and I start really, really loading up. I don't think there's ever been a time where I've seen that pattern in that scenario where I haven't loaded up on Big Orange.
Yeah, it's a good call. And, you know, I basically took some of my ETH. I put some in late last week, pulled out, and then, you know, trying to parlay that into more sats. And actually, I'm doing that right now. So I think it was a good move on my part. I maybe should have left it in. Looks like it ran up even higher, but whatever. I'm net gain. Let's see what happens with ETH going forward. So we got some news from Asia. So Nexon Company Limited, they announced they purchased 1.7K of Bitcoin worth approximately $100 million. That's all US dollars at an average price of approximately $58,000 per Bitcoin. So they are the biggest gaming company in South Korea. Nexon also purchased Bitstamp and Corbit. They're two major exchanges in Europe and South Korea in the past 3 years. So they're like, you know, knee deep or more actually neck deep into Bitcoin. So this is a huge move. This is going to help with getting more institutions from the Asian market and on board to Bitcoin.
Do you know, Nexon's the gaming company, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what they made, what game they made from my childhood? I don't know if you're familiar with it at all, but no. Do you know which one? For the people listening who are like my age, I'm an 87, Maple Story, which you used to be able to play, I think, on computer and maybe some consoles, but I don't remember. Might have been a browser game. Is that possible?
Maybe. I heard that name, but nothing really comes to mind what it looks like, what it's all about.
Just goes to show you that you make a decent game. Yeah, it is. It's like, exactly. It's like, I think it's a turn-based RPG game. Maybe JRPG, I'm not sure. But yeah, so I think that's like, for me anyway, was their claim to fame. I'm not sure what else they produce, but 100 million, not the number I want. I want B's and not M's, but I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, the beggars can't be choosers. So last week we talked about Tesla and there was a selling off of Bitcoin and we didn't really look upon it because it was still relatively fresh. So now we did a little bit more analysis, at least I did. And it looks like that they sold off 10% of their Bitcoin holdings. Elon also confirmed he did not sell any of his personal holdings. So he did not reduce his position. Tesla's CFO is on record saying that for the company Tesla, they're going to be holding on and accumulating Bitcoin going forward. So whatever Bitcoin is being spent to purchase a Tesla, they're going to basically hold on to that going forward. So this is something that was kind of overlooked the last time we talked on the podcast. So Elon is not selling, just Tesla sold.
Do you buy this this nonsense about him testing the liquidity of the Bitcoin market? Like he's selling to, yeah, you're shaking out. It's bullshit.
Yeah, no. They just probably needed the funds. $100 million. Was that the number thrown around that they made out of the sale of Bitcoin? So it looks like they needed it. You know, the carbon credits can only take them so far. They need something else to help push them over the edge. So next, I have is U.S. Bank, and it's part of the fifth largest banking institution in the United States. They'll now custody their clients' Bitcoin. So U.S. Bank Global Fund Services will offer a new cryptocurrency custody product for customers, with the engagement of a sub-custodian for fund servicing. They are finalizing their sub-custodian selection and will announce additional details in the coming weeks once internal reviews are final. So they're not new to this whole Bitcoin game. So in fact, they are the people administering NYDIG's ETF Bitcoin fund this year, which is still pending SEC approval. We talked about that earlier. So they're doing the administration of one of the Bitcoin ETFs. So this is actually interesting. So this is another bank that kind of capitulated and is selling Bitcoin to customers.
This is, I think you're going to, we've talked about this before too, like I'm kind of repeating myself, but we're going to see banks, even if they don't like Bitcoin, like you have to have something to do with it because the market and the demand is just outrageous and growing. So whether you like it or not, you got to play ball, man. And that's the whole point of Bitcoin. You may not care about Bitcoin, but Bitcoin cares about you. So get on board or get left behind.
So next I have a story, and I'm not going to say very much. I'm going to let you go on. I think you might have something to say. David Portnoy. So he said he's now the proud owner of one Bitcoin after selling all of his Doge and other cryptocurrency.
You want me to say about this?
I don't know I would imagine you'd have something to say on that guy because, every once in a while we hear a story about him on our hype chat. And so the fact now he owns one Bitcoin, maybe small, but he's in the game.
I'm a huge Portnoy fan. People don't like him. They say he's like, whatever, sexist or he's a serial harasser. I think most of that stuff is bullshit. He's proven himself, I think, to be a good guy. The Barstool Fund, when COVID started and there was bureaucratic delays and rolling out some of the stimmy checks to businesses who really need it, Barstool raised the money. They reached out to big time celebrities, including Chamath during the GameStop thing. And they really lit up the pocketbooks of businesses that needed it, I think to the tune of something like $200 million when all was said and done, maybe a bit less than that, but that's the number that pops into my head. So Portnoy having Bitcoin is great because Portnoy leads an army of bros every day on Davey Day Trader, which is his live stream trading desk. I'm not sure if that's still going on, but it was up until like 2 weeks ago. He's been obviously off at the Kentucky Derby and doing other things in the open, free, and COVID-free United States. So I don't blame him if he doesn't want day trade after day trading for a year straight with his mask on. The one Bitcoin thing is a bit of a contentious point on Tales from the Crypt. Marty Bent, who used to work at Barstool and knows Dave, helped him set up his Trezor, as I understand it. That's the lore. You know, for Portnoy, like Marty says, for Portnoy to say that all he can afford, which is his words, right? Those are his words. All I can afford is one Bitcoin right now. That's nonsense. This guy throws around seven figures and more on a daily basis when he's doing Davey Day Trader Global. So maybe his legal team says he can't say he has more than one, but if that truly is all he has, bit disappointing as a stack. Certainly he can afford more than one BTC, but I'll take it, man. Good exposure. He's got a younger target demo, so good for him.
I knew I'd get something from you. Next I have is PayPal. They see a huge demand for cryptocurrency. Their CEO says a big initiative of the company is helping move digital currency into the mainstream by adding cryptocurrency services. There's then a connection with Coinbase. Coinbase is now allowing customers to buy up to $25,000 of Bitcoin per day using their PayPal account. And furthermore, with Coinbase, they just acquired an institutional data analytics platform called Skew, and they're going to be providing real-time data analysis to customers to help them make more informed decisions. So we have kind of a PayPal Coinbase hybrid. I'm trying to tie everything together here, so I'm not sure if you have anything else to say.
This is so I'll spoil this for you. My Bitcoiner of the week was going to be this eBay CEO who I've seen make the rounds now on MSNBC and a few other places, or CNBC, I should say. He's my Bitcoiner of the week because, like you said, this guy seems to be dotting his I's and crossing his T's from earlier moves that PayPal has made into the Bitcoin foray. We talked on this show about how they were selling the frowned upon IOU, no withdrawals, buy, sell, and use basically in their ecosystem, but you can't pull it out. Well, now Coinbase has hopped on and they're going to be the facilitator for those big buys at 25K. eBay is going to take your Bitcoin as part of a transaction should you want to spend it. And furthermore, lest we forget, man, a lot of the stuff on eBay comes from some of these lesser developed economies. China's not really a great example anymore, but certainly there's lesser developed economies present in the eBay space where you maybe don't see them as much on Amazon and the like. Also, I'm all for people who are selling stuff independently, much like NFL players taking part of their salary in Bitcoin. If people want to sell some part of their stock for Bitcoin, this is a great way to do it. Above board, you can have some reasonable expectation that eBay and Coinbase and PayPal will work in your best interest in order to keep you happy as a customer and make this process easy for you. What I don't want to see is the data analytics thing come into play where they're blacklisting certain coins because of previous use, or coin joins and mixing and whirlpools, things of that nature that we've talked about here before. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. As always, when you're talking about exposure in a monster ecosystem like eBay, can only be a good thing, man. Can only be a good thing. So happy to see this. And he's my Bitcoiner of the week, although his name escapes me at the moment because I don't have my notes up.
Jamie Iannone.
There we go. There we go.
So you just stole my thunder because my very next story was going to be about the eBay allowing for payments to include cryptocurrency. Thanks, Joey. And then you threw in your Bitcoiner of the week. You're really stealing my thunder here.
I'm cutting the show short here.
What the heck? So SEC, we talked about this briefly, earlier, so I'm just going to do a little bit more in depth. SEC pushes the decision on the VanEck Bitcoin ETF until June. So now we know the name of the ETF that's being pushed till June is the VanEck. So there's been a recent speech by Biden, and he's been mentioning there'll be more proposals. Sorry, there'll be another proposal for spending in the tune of $6 trillion. Wow. If that doesn't spell inflation, I don't know what does. You want to talk about that, or is that basically self-explanatory?
Well, like, how do you defend these positions if you're a politician? Like, this is why when people say to me, you know, in Canada, I know we're not talking about Canadian spending, but when people say that, like, something is difficult to stomach as, you know, a second death tax is passing in the United States, or like is on the books in the United States to be debated. $6 trillion more in COVID spending when COVID is over there. Like, there's no one suffering from COVID in the United States anymore. If you're suffering from COVID now, it's because your own psychosis has disabled you from rational thought. That's not my problem. Certainly not my problem to the tune of $6 trillion and a giant tax increase for my children, their children, and the children after that. That's your problem after you get your shot or have the shot available to you. That's one piece. Second piece is, When people say stuff like in Canada, to bring it back to something closer to home, oh, we'll never pass a tax on unrealized capital gains. Oh, yeah? It seems to me like this kind of spending and this kind of clawback is getting more and more popular because more and more people are farther and farther behind the economic eight ball. And I won't speculate on their motives for voting this way, but certainly want to see some of the money come back from the coffers of the rich to what they imagine anyway is the coffers of the poor. $6 trillion is a lot, man. And it's, you know, people can say whatever they want about the Canadian dollar being strong. I guess if you look at the chart, it looks okay, but you tell me in terms of your own currency and your own experience with the currency, how strong is the dollar compared to 5 years ago? Looks pretty fucking weak to me, my friends. Len, take it away. You got anything else?
Yeah, I got two more stories, but before I go there, I just want to touch about the trillion. I know we talked about this, or I talked about this in a Danter show. Just wanted to bring it up here. If you go back 2000 years, I give you $1 million a day for 2000 years. That only equates to $730 billion, not even $1 trillion. So $1 million a day, which is a lot of money, for 2,000 years, still doesn't equate to 1 trillion. It just puts into perspective how much 1 trillion really is. So just two more stories. Let's see. We have, actually, we'll just go with one more story.
Oh, go two. We got time.
Okay. We'll go with a couple more stories. So The Danske Bank in Denmark will be charging a negative interest rate of -1% for all balances over 100,000 kroner. That's $16,000. So people just stop saving money. They should just buy Bitcoin. I know you, Joy, like full disclosure, you and I work at the same place. And I remember, you know, 2-3 years ago, you were talking about negative interest rates. This was a topic of discussion a few times at the roundtable lunch. Here we go. This is real life examples. If you have over $16,000 in this bank, you're going to be subjected to negative interest rates. That's pathetic.
This is insane. This is insane, man. $16,000 is not that much. There's more than $16,000 available to me, like through my phone at this very moment. So people who have $16,000 in the bank are not rich by any stretch. They're middle-class people. They're living, you know, thinking about what they're going to do in 5 years, 10 years, maybe not living paycheck to paycheck, but certainly not looking at whatever pleasure craft they're going to be picking up for the summertime at the cottage on the lake with the in-water dock. No one with $16,000 in cash is doing that. That's an average, I think, amount of money for a working mid-30s couple for sure, but I would argue even a person. Now, here's my other question. What do they think people who have $16,000 in the bank are going to do? Do they think that people are going to take that money out and stimulate, quote unquote, the economy? Or do they think they're going to dump it into stocks and equities and what, like whatever other garbage, you know, like what do you think they're going to do there? What is the desired outcome? More importantly, the desired outcome is that people with 16 grand are going to take it out and spend it on trinkets, spend it on French fries, spend it on beer, spend it on, you know, bread and circuses, to quote a great, great ancient philosopher, whose name escapes me at the moment,
Nero?
But maybe Nero, I don't know. But so what is the point of this policy? Well, the point is to force you to consume. Imagine you spend your whole life making good decisions and you have cash in the bank and you don't want to take a risk, or even worse, you're an elderly person, Len, and you got 16 grand or 30 grand or 50 grand or 100 grand, you're living off of it. You know, you're watching it erode, but you just can't take a risk. Now you got to watch it erode and you got to fucking put it in your shoebox under your bed because you can't leave it in the bank. Like, this is insanity. And I wish this stuff didn't come two or three years ago, but we're here, man. And I think for a while, like the US 10-year was negative last week too, right? So like, this is, people are like, oh, it'll never come here. Dummy, it's already on its way. You can see it in other developed economies. This is not too far away from us. And it's a policy that's going to be, you know, you're going to be warmed up to it by the time it comes into play, and you're going to hear positives about it and all this kind of nonsense like you hear from Lagarde over at the ECB. It's coming here, man, because the biggest economies are doing it and we are going to do it too. So
I think Japan has been doing it for some time. I think the reason for Japan actually putting this policy in place is that society over there, they kind of save their money. They don't spend that much. And it was a way over there to encourage them, just rather than keep it in storage and at the bank, to just spend it to try to stimulate the economy. But that's kind of a more of a something that's over there. And over here, if it comes into, you know, into North America, that's going to be pathetic. It's, you know, but 16,000, like you say, it's not a lot of money. There's going to be a lot of people having that money in the bank, making $20 an hour flipping burgers. Yeah. Because they're going to be raising the interest, the minimum wage over here.
So. Raise it to $50 an hour.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? If we got 6 trillion, surely we got $50 an hour.
That's divvy it up. I agree. Last story I have is on Berkshire. We have a couple of dinosaurs talking about Bitcoin. I don't know what the heck they were saying. They were slurring their words and they were just seemed like they were drunk. That guy Munger, he does do a lot of great one-liners. I have to give him credit. But man, he's got a punchable face.
He's like 100. You know what I mean? Like,
97, not quite 100. Don't give him the credit yet. He may not get there. But yeah, he's worth $3 billion. He could buy and sell me on a whim. I got to look at the reality of it. But yeah, that's I don't know if you want to talk about Berkshire and what happened this weekend, but yeah, well, dinosaurs.
So you want to talk about what he said?
I don't want to go into it. I just want to just briefly touch on it before we go to the next topic. Unless you want to do a deep dive.
I got stuff to talk about. We're early. We usually go an hour, 40 minutes. We're going to be done before that.
So this is the express episode today.
Yeah, we may as well talk about it. I got to go to Home Depot, so we may as well talk about this. Munger and Buffett are like the pinnacle of detached fiat royalty from real life, okay? And a couple of examples I have of this. These guys pulling out on their golf cart in their $3,000, $5,000, $7,000 suits, whatever. Both of them. You would think if you were fucking 95 and 97 or whatever these guys are, 101, you would be drinking like water with a lemon in it. These guys both have a 750 a Coke in their hand on the
clock. Diet Coke. Okay,
that's whatever. Does it matter? Like Donald Trump says, I've never seen a thin person drinking Diet Coke, and he's probably right. So that's one thing. The other thing is Munger made comments that like, it's hard to offend me with a comment. Like most of the time I'll just laugh and think you're stupid, but this is like an offensive thing to say to people. Bitcoin is like countervailing to the, like to the goals of proper society or like a thriving society. Dude, how can you say that? When was the last time that guy was part of society that he's apparently speaking on behalf of now from behind bulletproof glass with his $10,000 tuxedo or whatever the guy had on in his sugary soda? When was the last time that guy counted himself among the regular people? When do you think it was? 50 years ago? 60 years ago? Like, when, Len, it was so long ago.
Think of how much the world has changed since then. Never mind the time span that's passed. Like, think about how different the world is from the time he was actually considered.
It's clueless, man. You know, like, about this stuff. And I got a real problem with that. I will say that I didn't know Warren Buffett was in an open 3-participant marriage until this weekend. So
I did not know that.
Well, all the things I have to say about Warren Buffett are negative, but good for him. He was able to pull that off. That's probably the secret to a long life, now that I'm thinking about it.
But Munger's a few years older than him. I wanted to do a deep dive onto his relationships. Maybe there's something there that we should see.
Call the Inquisitor.
What a joke those guys are. You know what? It's going to sound kind of harsh in a way, but Father Time will take care of that problem for us.
Well, it will. It will. And like also, like those guys are underperforming the S&P the last 20 years. So,
and it was, wait, 12 times, something like that. 12 times they beat it or 12 times they didn't beat it in the past 20 years. But either way, it's almost a coin flip. And you know what? I could throw a dart on a wall and be right sometimes and right and not right. These guys, they don't have a good track record lately. Before that, they were very good. But let's be honest, since the 2000s, they're a joke, you know. They're still worth a lot of money, but they haven't accumulated a heck of a lot more money. If they invested, say, in Bitcoin, could you imagine they put a portion of their wealth in Bitcoin? These guys wouldn't be billionaires. They wouldn't be trillionaires. I don't know what's beyond that, but they'd be in that category.
The reason these guys have to do their shareholder meeting in person, even in COVID at 100 years old, is because they can't figure out Zoom. So I don't think you're going to get Bitcoin from these guys anytime soon.
Was it done in California, this last one? I think that they're doing it now out west to just, not to appease Munger, but just because he's older and he can't travel. And so they have to go to him rather than him traveling out. This is the stage that they are at in their life. You know, these guys they're very old. You know, anybody that lives in their 90s, you know, it's kind of it's a blessing. These guys one guy is 97. Kudos to them. They're standing in front of a stage or a table. They're, you know, answering questions. They seem to be with it when it comes to answering some of these questions. But if you really dig into it, they ain't with it. They're clueless. So let's go on to the topic of the week. And it's BISC and with their XMR BTC atomic pairing. Ultimately, that's going to lead to lower fees, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to talk a little bit about BISC before I go any further. So BISC, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, it's BISQ. So BISC is a decentralized exchange, which is ironically located in the United States. How could something be decentralized but still located somewhere? But nonetheless, there's an address and it's in Massachusetts. So BISC is a peer-to-peer trading network. It's not a centralized service. It's a software you run on your own hardware. It's not a website run by somebody else. It's an open source and community-driven software. So you basically something you need and it has to be downloaded on your computer in order to make use of it. So through that, you could do some peer-to-peer trading of cryptocurrency like Bitcoin and XMR. XMR is Monero. So BISC is not a company, but an open source project that aims to fill a gap in the cryptocurrency ecosystem to provide an exchange platform which follows the same principles as Bitcoin itself. A unique incentive mechanism is set up to support the project. And there's two of them. One is transaction fees go in part to the developers and in part to the arbitrators. And second is, in the event of a dispute, arbitrators collect the security deposit of the losing party, or in some cases, half the deposit of each party. So I'm going to go a little further. XMR. What is XMR? It's Monero. Monero is a privacy-focused cryptocurrency released in 2014. It's an open-source protocol, and anyone can send or broadcast transactions, but no outside observer can tell the source, amount, or destination. This gives a layer of privacy not offered in other cryptocurrencies. I would imagine that We're going to hear some news on that. That's other cryptocurrencies can do it, but XMR slash Monero, whatever you want to call it, seems to be the gold standard in that regard. So doing this, they're trying to pair the BTC and XMR atomic trading. So what you're trying to achieve here is a greater level of privacy. So right now, you could do anonymous trading with somebody on the peer-to-peer network, but it could be risky. So right now, if you do a peer-to-peer trade, and you could be caught in the sights of AML, anti-money laundering, traders can and have been blacklisted from banks, their bank accounts frozen, etc. So it could be pretty bad if you do a peer-to-peer trade with somebody that's risky, because it will impact both parties. So the XMR slash BTC atomic swap, what is an atomic swap? It's a smart contract technology that enables the exchange of one cryptocurrency for another without using centralized intermediaries, such as an exchange. So the codename, which BISC is going along with, to getting this whole atomic swap between XMR and BTC, which ultimately will have lower fees in the end. Their codename is Farcaster. It's one word. Anyone that wants to do more insight on this, you can just do a search on Google, Farcaster. There's a bunch of threads by the developers on Reddit. It's a deep dive if you want to go down that one. So the swapping process from BTC to XMR is technically challenging right now. For one, they don't share the same signing algorithm. So how this works, what they're trying to achieve, as a broad overview and simplified, the protocol will work as follows. The Monero slash XMR are locked in an address generated by both participants. At the beginning, neither the participants have full control over the address. They have half of the private keys only. So each will have half the private keys. With a discrete logarithm, both participants prove to each other that the address on the blockchain, the Bitcoin blockchain, is related to the address on the Monero exchange. So there's going to be a connection between the Bitcoin chain and the Monero exchange. By means of Bitcoin scripts and one-time verifiable encrypted signatures, one participant reveals to the other his or her partial private keys by taking the Bitcoin, allowing the other one to take over the Monero. So if the swap is successful, A reveals to B, and the swap is then, you know, basically done. So it's really neat how they're trying to achieve some issues here with technically challenging hurdles. And so this whole process will effectively take away the middleman of the exchange. And it's going to create some more added security between BTC and getting it to the Monero or vice versa. And so this information will not be stored on any exchange, which is done right now. So it creates a lot more privacy. I'm not sure if you want to add to that, Joey, but that's what I've gotten so far out of this whole process. It's actually pretty exciting. It's going to make BISC a little bit more relevant, lowers the fees, creates some more privacy in the whole process. I don't know. What else do you want to say on that?
BISC is not near and dear to me, I shouldn't say, but like, it's one of the things I first started looking at years ago when I was looking at Bitcoin and was like big on trying new stuff and just messing around with different applications and whatnot. The thing that's going on with BISC right now is maybe unique at the moment, but it's not going to be unique for much longer. And I'll post a link to the GitHub discussion page and a pretty good summary Twitter thread of about, 12 or 15 tweets. And the crux of the problem BISC is having now, and Len kind of alluded to one of the ways they're considering fixing this, is BISC is an exchange where you trade Bitcoin or some other token for fiat or some other token without a middleman. And the problem with that is that you don't have stuff like transaction batching and second layer options and things of that nature, because the transactions are too small, quote unquote. It's one UTXO, for example, one spend. So because the miners' fees are going up, and because in a situation where you're trading with one other person who oftentimes you don't know, you can't wait for 60 blocks for it to reconcile. You can't wait for it for 100 blocks to reconcile or to confirm, as the parlance goes. So you have to pay. And you can't pay next block fees all the time, because sometimes the next block fees are like more than $100. It's too much for the value being traded on some of these exchanges, because the value totals are so low. So they're having this problem now for, I would guess, not the first time, but obviously it's gathered enough steam that they're talking about ways to reconcile this and fix it. So they're talking about a number of different weak spots the exchange has in its current form. And so this is taken right from the GitHub page. It says the potential replacement of traditional fiat money with CBDCs is going to disrupt the primary use case for BISC as a fiat exchange. Automated market maker models for solving the liquidity problem and improving usability are superior to a barter model. Atomic cross-chain swaps remove requirement for collateral and any trusted third party. Layer 2 solutions for avoiding high miner fees and getting instant transfers, and sidechains or other blockchains for enhanced and custom smart contract functionality. So they mentioned here some stuff about Lightning, for example, that we've talked about on this show, and the possibility for that to solve the problem. The issue is that there's no multi-sig support, and channel capacity is not that high. So that, you know, atomic swaps on Lightning and stuff like that, it's an okay idea as far as I understand it, but it's not quite there. And you can't do atomic swaps on Lightning with Monero. So that's another hiccup. Without going too deep into the technical issues, like I said, I'll link this in the show notes. The problem here is that, and it's something I hadn't considered before, quite honestly, because I don't use decentralized exchanges. I pay, you know, a little bit of a spread where I buy, and that's all I really think about. But as the miner fees go up, because the value of Bitcoin presumably goes up, you know, knock on wood, you're going to have some hesitation from people buying and selling and trading small amounts with others outside of layer two. And because layer two has some limitations at the moment, these guys are in a bit of a pickle. And so I don't know how many people have their eyes on this. Like, I can't remember where I caught this, but I caught it somewhere, either on a podcast or somewhere else. And it really got my attention because I knew the name, and I've had the client installed on my computer in the past, and it's so polished. Like, talk about an open source project that has done an extraordinary amount with what is certainly a small amount of support for the work they've done. I hate to say it because I haven't supported them either. You really want to see stuff like this succeed. And when we talk about layer two, I think too often we talk about ease of use and convenience, and we don't talk about, well, what are we doing for the core mission, which ultimately is value without a middleman and without censorability. And this is really the lever with which you could execute that ethos day to day, if you could make, you know, something like a decentralized exchange work. So I don't know a ton about the miners fees and exactly what they are at the moment, but certainly anyone who's taking money off an exchange that's not ShakePay knows that sometimes if you catch it at a peak time, you know, you're talking, without even getting next block, you're talking $40, $50 US for a transaction, which is insane. I took money off Binance the other day, Ethereum off of Binance, and it cost me like $18 to move something like $80, maybe. I forget exactly what it was, but like an insane amount. And that's supposed to be the faster of the two, right? Everyone talks about gas fees and how they're high sometimes, other times they're lower than Bitcoin. But that, at that time, it was like a Sunday afternoon, yesterday or Saturday, sky high. And so Bitcoin's going to have the same problem, especially as the price of the coin goes up. So I'm curious about what people who listen to this show think. And I think, Len, I know we're going to announce, I'm going to tell people tonight, like I don't have time to do the pleb podcast, unfortunately, with some other time commitments that I have, but I do want to get on, maybe after I get married, someone from BISC's core team or someone who has a little more knowledge on this topic, because, you know, at the end of the day, it may not be super important for the success of the space, but certainly if we're talking about banking the unbanked, which is something you hear in this space all the time, if we're talking about helping people in disadvantaged economies with currencies that are inflating to a million, this is the kind of service that has to work for them with very little friction. And as it stands, it looks like this is going in the wrong direction. So I'm hopeful BISC figures this out, but either way, I want to talk to somebody about it and find out more because it's important, I think.
So from what I understand, the with Taproot and the Schnorr signature that's going to be put into the Bitcoin, it works very well with the whole atomic swap between XMR and BTC. So that's going to be very encouraging for this whole process moving forward. Secondly, there's revelation over there that you mentioned. I was floored. Ethereum, Binance, you had to come on. I want to hear more about this. Actually, I'm sure everyone, you've been dissing Ethereum for, I don't know how many episodes, sixth episode. And in for years up now. Until that I've known you. Come on. You bought Ethereum?
I had it.
Go on. I want to hear it.
I had it on Binance. I don't know why I had it there, but I did. And so I moved it over to ShakePay to get rid of it because there's like a minimum ETH you have to transfer to Bitcoin. And then you have to be able to get it off, which also costs money. So I said, wow, whatever. I'll just transfer it off to ShakePay and do it there.
Did you have it on Binance all this time or did you buy into it recently?
No, and all that time, probably years so now, 3 years.
You've been a shitcoiner for a very long time. Annoying. And you've been, there we go. So next time you talk to somebody else about being a Bitcoin maxi, you're a shitcoiner.
Gotta eat my medicine there. But yeah, the best thing, like I don't know what the outcome is going to be. I wish this is one of the times where I wish I didn't spend the last like 3 years learning about like technicals and philosophy and instead knew a little bit more about like the cryptography and the technical technological challenges involved in Bitcoin and pushing it forward, because this seems to me like it's a more important story than it's getting credit for, and I wish I could give it the spotlight it deserves, but I don't have the depth of knowledge. So hopefully someone can help us out with that in the not too distant future.
Yeah, we'll have to reach out to somebody that has more knowledge in this. As our schedules, basically open up through the summer, maybe latter half of the summer, we'll definitely explore that option. So I want to move over to the Bitcoiner and NoCoiner of the Week. You already revealed your Bitcoiner of the Week. Thank you,
I didn't mean to.
So yeah, so you're just stealing the thunder. So my Bitcoiner of the Week is kind of a controversial one. So I just want to talk about, I've had an exchange with a viewer on YouTube, and he recommended bringing up this guy as a no coiner, but I'm going to use him as my Bitcoiner of the Week, Bill Maher. And the reason why, originally this guy was going to be my my no coiner of the week, and I was going to have a double no coiner this week, but I did some careful thinking. Some reflection, and everybody heard it. This guy did his soliloquy on the show on how Bitcoin is essentially worthless. He quoted, Buffett. We talked about Buffett, so quoting him is meaningless now. Talking about how it uses too much energy, it's bad for the environment. He also went ripping into Tesla for buying Bitcoin. That's fine and dandy. But you know what? He did two things here. So number one, by doing this, I think he's tipping his hand that he owns Bitcoin. This is just my theory. Like the fact that he's doing this, he's kind of like another mouthpiece that is sounding the alarm, but he's shining the light on Bitcoin on a community that probably doesn't even know Bitcoin or cares about it. So by doing so, he might onboard new users. So that's why I think he's kind of tipping his hand, and he really is a Bitcoiner. And this is another thing. The fact that he's dissing Bitcoin and just talking bad about it, it's galvanizing already a tight-knit community against Maher. So doing that is just kind of just riling up the Bitcoiners and say, you're wrong. All you're presenting here is shit. And, this is actually good for us. So this is what he's basically doing. It seems like he's getting more people on board the Bitcoin bandwagon, and the people that are already here, we're just freaking going nuts. So that's why he's my Bitcoiner of the week. And I'm sorry to the viewer out there that wanted him to be the no coiner, but I kind of threw a curveball and made him my Bitcoiner of the week. So do you have a no coiner?
Yeah, my no coiner is Tinder's hottest new acquisition, Melinda Gates, who finally is leaving behind her soy husband in search of real meat, as I imagine it. So Melinda, if you're listening to our show,
that works on so many levels.
If you're listening to our show, Melinda, and you want to find out about hard money and real meat, you can check out our YouTube channel, our Reddit posts, our Twitter feeds, and I'm sure you will find a willing Sherpa there to the world of proper economic theory and hard money. So welcome to the ranks of the Bitcoiners without knowing. Also, when is the Mackenzie Bezos, or what's her last name? Mackenzie Scott. When's the Mackenzie Scott, Melinda Gates podcast coming out? Can we get them on? Can we get them on our network? Wait, well, I'll produce the audio.
combine those two, they have so much money. Or I mean, when Melinda actually finalizes the divorce, man, they're gonna have so much money. Good for them. They made out, like, you know, whatever. So mine, that was actually probably a late addition on your part, because this announcement of the split between Bill and Melinda is relatively new to us. So my no coiner, do you know who Nassim Taleb is?
Of course, Mr. Anti-Fragile.
Yeah, so The Economist, he basically called the Bitcoin a volatile stunt. So this guy is claiming it's a pyramid scheme. So his claim to fame was a 2007 book, Black Swan, which predicted a pandemic. And here we are, you know, in the midst of one, depending who you talk to, Joey or somebody else. But it seems that we're in the middle of one. And he's been getting a little bit of press, maybe a lot of press. And so I quote, he said, "Something that moves 5% per day, 20% a month, up or down, cannot be a currency. It's something else." Yeah, dummy, it's a store of value. Check the charts. Zoom out. This thing is rocketing up. Like, I don't understand why you think it's a pyramid. More people are jumping on board than they are getting off. That's why the price is going out. So this guy could take his FUD, shove it where the sun don't shine, and let us enjoy accumulating our wealth. And
do you know that we're just... Oh, sorry, I thought you were done. But
no. I mean, we're Bitcoin plebs. Like, we deserve to have some fun. Just because this guy's, you know, he's rich and we can't accumulate the same wealth he has. That's what I tell him, you know, like, giving a middle finger to him. Screw you, buddy. Screw you.
He wrote the foreword for the Bitcoin Standard.
How did he turn on it?
That's amazing. That's really the most amazing thing. Him and Saifedean have like a legitimate Twitter beef now, where like they post pictures of each other's tweets and DMs, like ugly stuff, after he wrote the foreword.
Yeah, I want to hear what Saif says in his next podcast. He's going to tear a strip off him. If he hasn't, he should.
It's been going for a while, right? So this was like, that's Taleb basically bailed, I think, like 6 or so weeks ago, and publicly like went after Saifedean on his feed, on Taleb's feed. Insane, man. Like, Saifedean is a lot of things, but he's not disingenuous, or, you know, like, he's not a snake oil salesman. I think he really believes the stuff he says, obviously. And Ethereum, by the way, is $3,450 right now, US, which is an insane amount of money for something that is on a AWS server hosted by Amazon. So
that's something I learned this week. It was some long thread on Twitter, and I was amazed by some of the.
It's on Infura. It's on Amazon Web Services. Yeah,
incredible, isn't it? But you know what? It's getting a lot of steam. But so is Doge. I mean, it's hard to say. Like, fundamentals, they mean nothing in the end. It's where the money is going. That's. But in the long run, we'll see what's going to happen. It may or may not fizzle out. Yeah, but. Yeah, so that's it, Joey. What's the price of BTC in US dollars?
Way higher than Ethereum, $57,334.71.
So in Canadian, it went up a little bit. It's $70,605.92. And two last things, Joey. Just want to remind everybody that's listening on the podcast, we do have some YouTube videos. We have some that actually does a whole review on different exchanges available to Canadians. I recommend taking a look at it. Plus one it, subscribe to our channel. It'd be great for us. And the last thing I just want to ask you, Joey, are you a financial advisor?
I'm not. I want to say to the listening public, Len is really selling those videos short. He did a fucking kick-ass job on all those videos. So definitely check them out. Share them with your friends. Sign up with the links and get the word out there. Len crushed it on that. I'm not a financial advisor, to answer your question. No. Are you?
No, man, no way. So in the end, don't take what we're saying, you know, just do your own due diligence and do some research and go from there. And, you know, don't sue us.
Yeah, that's it. See you next week, everybody.
Take care, everyone.